Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'll be talking about uncovering. For several weeks now, I've been talking about cover story, your cover story, my cover story, everybody's cover story, because everybody has one, and about what we are hiding undercover. And today I'm going to be talking about uncovering and how you can begin to do that. And I'm giving you an exercise called Who Am I Really? To help you begin the process of uncovering. I'm also playing the second half of my interview with the amazing, delightful, unexpected, funny, outrageous, spontaneous Carol Schweid. And if you were listening last week, I know you're listening again because Carol is really, really interesting. And as I said last week, and will say as I introduce the second part of her interview, we're starting with the era of children, which may have meaning for lots of you. Anyway, hang on. Here comes the show. Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about discovering who you really are, and then, especially if you discover some things you didn't know before, allowing them to become active in your life. Lots of people think that they are just who they are, and that the way they have been behaving and the qualities they've been demonstrating are really all there is. But my 30 years as a practicing psychotherapist and my somewhat more years of living have shown me that that's really not the truth. Of course, all the things that you do and say and think and feel and demonstrate in the world, they really are you, but they are almost certainly not the whole story. Unless you are vastly different from all of the rest of us, There are qualities about you. Capacities, skills, ideas, beliefs, feelings, memories that you are not in touch with, not aware of, that are shielded from your conscious awareness. The you that you demonstrate, show, think of as yourself, I call that our cover story. You know, like the spy cover story. It's what we present because we think that is either who we are, we have reason to believe that is who we are, and that's all we are, or it's who we think we have to be. But in any case, the qualities that you have hidden, kept underground, what I call undercover qualities, they may very well be qualities that you could benefit from using, maybe even need in your life. And as long as you don't know they're there, you can't use them. To do all the things you are capable of doing, you have to be all of the things you are. And that means you have to pull off your cover and reclaim your undercover. However, as long as you think of one of them as bad and the other one as good, your taboo against uncovering will be very strong. And of course, the very reason for putting qualities, thoughts, memories, feelings, abilities, capacities, skills, and we do all of that, undercover, is because you have reason to believe they are bad. They will embarrass you, cause criticism to be heaped on you, punishment maybe even, abandonment maybe even. And we learn these lessons so early in our life, and they are so deeply hidden from us that we're not really aware of it. So let's, for example, say you stubbed your toe when you were two or whatever, and you cried and cried and cried, because that's what would be appropriate under the circumstances. And one or both of your parents were not only kind and loving, but were cold, or even worse, punishing. Well, you can see that you would come to think of crying as a dangerous, at worst, and unpleasant, at best, thing to do. And you might put all your capacity for feeling sadness undercover. You might think about people who immediately well up as crybabies, and your cover story would be that you are not a crybaby. These things simply do not bother you. But of course, your capacity to feel sadness, tenderness, distress cannot possibly have gone away. You can't amputate that simply because you decide you don't want it. What happens is it goes undercover. Now, you may think that's not a big deal. So what? I don't cry. So what? I don't feel sad. But in actual fact, it's a very big deal. First of all, it takes a lot of energy to suppress that, and that energy is not available to you. Second of all, the suppressing of that and the energy that it takes is hard on your body, and that's not good for you. But even if that weren't enough, if you cannot demonstrate that something hurts you, then you can't adequately let people know how to stop hurting you. Oh, I know, you can use rage. That's what most people who have to hide from their sadness wind up doing. They replace it with anger. But I promise you it's not nearly as effective. And all it does is distance people from you. Whereas when you can demonstrate that something hurt you by the look on your face and the tears in your eyes, that will discourage people from doing that to you again, those people who care for you, and will bring them closer to you, not further away. So you can see, in this one tiny example, how having put something undercover might be undermining the quality of your life. So if you're thinking about this, as you begin to think about what you might have kept undercover, try and keep an open mind. Because qualities that once were thought of as bad, contemptible, or dangerous may actually be, as I pointed out, the changes that you need to to live the very best life that you can live. And keep in mind that all qualities can be viewed as both good and bad. Recklessness is often called bravery, and stinginess can also be seen as the desirable trait of thrift. I like to quote Barbara Streisand's speech to the women in Film Hall of Fame when she was inducted there. She said, a man is commanding, a woman demanding. A man is forceful, a woman is pushy. He shows leadership, she controlling. He's committed, she's obsessed. He's persevering, she's relentless. He sticks to his guns, but she's stubborn. And of course, you know, this is just a sort of sexist description of these qualities. But the truth is that these qualities can be described in both ways. And if you describe them in their positive aspect, then you can claim them and use them. But if you're stuck with describing some qualities of your own in the negative, then it's very bad for you. Then it's very hard for you to claim them. And if you can't claim them, you can't use them. Okay, so that's my that's the first part of this show, which, as you heard, is me talking about cover story, learning about yourself, discovering yourself, becoming all that you can be. And most of this information can be found in my book called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And you can find access to the book on my website, thelynshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E, don't leave the E out of Lynn, S-H-O-W, thelynshow.com. And you can also find podcasts from the old shows. So there are shows in which I talk about cover story and more about undercover. And you can click on them and listen to them, or you can get the book and read it, or the audiobook, or the workbook. And actually, speaking of the workbook, I have a little exercise for you. If you're beginning to wonder about what you might be keeping undercover, what you might be demonstrating as a cover, this is a very simple exercise, and it might help you just begin the process of recovery. You write two sentences that describe you, both of which begin with the words, I am, and are followed by a list of adjectives. Complete the first sentence by the adjectives that you like or approve of. I am good, pretty, kind, smart, decent, thrifty, whatever. Complete the second sentence with the adjectives that you don't like or you disapprove of. I am bad, selfish, stupid, ugly, smartass, reckless, dependent, too independent. Just whatever comes to mind. Okay, good luck with that exercise. If you have any questions about it, you want to tell me anything that you learn about it, just go up to the lynshow.com website and click on email me and tell me. But this brings us to the second part of my show, an Atomy of an Artist interview series. And today I'm playing the second half of an interview I did with the remarkable Carol Schweid, dancer, singer, actor, director, writer, producer, if you can do it. Carol has done it and is doing it. And in the first half, you heard the story of her early life, the way she found her art, which was basically dancing, her experiences at Juilliard and in the New York theater scene, the good, the bad, the ugly, the terrific, the exciting, the horrifying. And we arrived at the place where the era of children. That's where we left off, and that's where we're picking up. So I know that if you heard last week, you're listening again this week, because Carol is interesting, funny, honest, direct, surprising. And so, as they say, with no further ado, here is Carol Schweid.
So then there was the era of children. And
yes, and then there was the era of children.
Which was wonderful, you know. And I still kept working.
Talk.
More or less. Oh, well, like, but strange jobs. Like the thing about the baby play. I started to get like off-Broadway things while the kids, you know, but it was all strange. I don't know, was it like, I don't know, what am I trying to say here? I don't know, it started to get less creative when I came back to New York, mm-hmm. had some children, and then it would be like, I'd have an audition, so I'd run to Steve's office, drop off the kids, run to the audition, run back to Steve's office.
Right, pick up the kids, right.
Pick up, you know, find a babysitter for 4 hours so I could,
yeah.
you know, finish writing on the bench because I felt compelled to write this.
Well, this is the other thing. This is when you started to write. Yeah, well, right. Okay, so what was the motivation to start writing?
Well, I think a lot of people have to do something when they have kids. They get like a compulsion to express what that is.
Oh, my God, I bet that's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've read a lot of mommy plays.
Wow.
And seen them. And Mandy Patinkin's wife wrote a mother play. And
yeah.
I mean, like, they've crossed my path over the years.
Yeah.
So I wrote...
I've never heard anybody say this, but I think that it's probably exactly right.
I sort of think it's true.
I'm sure it's true. And it doesn't matter. It's one of those experiences that no matter what anybody tells you about it, when you have it, you're the first person who's had it.
Yeah.
You can't... Nothing... Right?
Yeah, and you can't get over how much fun it is. I mean, aside from all the other stuff.
Yeah.
That it's just the cool. It's yeah, very cool. Right. So
Carol wrote this wonderful play called...
This play called On the Bench.
Right.
And it was about a woman, well, she was in the playground, and mm-hmm. she was on the bench. And her two friends came and joined her on the bench because yeah. the kids
because
were in
the
audience was, right. and it was winter, and she was sort of having a little problem deciding, like, she couldn't stand up. She couldn't get up. She couldn't actually
move.
She couldn't, because she didn't know which way to go, yeah, so she right. couldn't move. And it was done a couple times, and it was done twice in New York. It's been done twice in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I was pretty proud of that.
It's wonderful.
I kept working on it. I
get to say here that in my long experience of Carol, I can't think of a time when there either wasn't a project she was actually working on or one that she was planning to work on.
Hmm.
She's continually having ideas of things that she either actually completes or that she's going to work on, going to do. Does this not feel right to
wow.
you?
Wow, that sounds great.
Yeah, it is great. It is great. And it's so interesting because you talk so much about the physical stuff, about how important that is to you and how compelling and but in my experience of you, your brain never stops. You know, there is always an idea for a review or another play or a book or it's always. Does this not sound familiar to you?
Well,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah.
But I didn't generate like as a young. I didn't start any of these projects. But I would show up at the audition. You know.
Well, this is pretty much after the kids were
yeah.
born. You know, before that, you were going to things that were already established and trying to become part of them. But in the last 20 years, you've been starting a lot of things. You've been initiating a lot of things.
I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, well, you know, you want to work.
Yes.
Because it's boring if you're not working. It's boring.
I don't think this is true for everybody.
Really?
Yeah. But I do think it's true for you. So, now, between On the Bench and Agnes, what was going on in there?
Well, the last show I did in New York was something called Theda Bara and the Frontier Rabbi.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And it was an adorable musical, actually. And Theda Bara was about the movie industry in the mm-hmm. early days, and mm-hmm. Theda Bara was one of the characters, and I was like her spiritual advisor.
Oh my God!
It was cute. It was mm-hmm. Vivian Madelon directed it. It was great, actually. Mm-hmm. That was like a pre-Broadway workshop, and then I'm not sure what it was that drove me out of the city.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just got to me. It was too much. I had a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. And no washing machine in my apartment. was tough. And I didn't love the work, whatever the work was. I did a lot of things, but none of them had any heft to them.
Yeah.
And also, things had changed in New York. The era of the big, big musical singer shows, Phantom of the Opera, the 80s.
Mm.
When, you know, and I wasn't a singer. I had a good voice, mm-hmm. and I was funny, but I couldn't compete with these.
Sarah Brightman.
Oh, my God. You know, I don't think I ever would have got. So it was shifting.
Right.
And the city was shifting, and it just all of a sudden got hard.
Yeah.
It just felt, and my kids were reaching that age where they were going to want to be running, Max was going to be running around the city by himself at 10.
Right.
And I was freaked out, boy. I just didn't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
So I got in the car and came to
Connecticut. Hello.
Yeah. And creatively, mm-hmm. and I picked this town because the Westport Playhouse is here. There are a lot of actor types here. Westport has a huge history of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may not be so much now because it's become a wealthier suburb, but the roots are here.
Right.
And that it attracts the people who were just a little off. It's not your typical Westchester suburb.
Right.
So I came up here, you know, whatever. So we all moved here, got the family out of into Connecticut.
Right.
And I found myself when my kids were like in elementary school and I would be working or not working or whatever, but I found myself like looking for something to do. And I started reading books, and I read Dance to the Piper. I'm sitting in the backyard with my shoes off, reading Dance to the Piper, and mm-hmm. I went, oh, my God.
Dance to the Piper is the...
By Agnes DeMille. It's her first, it's her autobiography, the first book she ever wrote. And for a, she was the best writer there, she was the best, I can't even say it right, but she was a magnificent writer. And she articulated the whole struggle of being the niece of Cecil B. DeMille, and struggling and never having a success, and then finally doing Rodeo.
Yes.
At something like 38.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And all of a sudden having a big success, and that leading to Oklahoma. And then she was married to a guy who was in the army, who was a soldier. So he was overseas, and she was home making ballets. And it just, like, I went, oh, my God. So I started to do research and meet DeMille dancers and learn pieces from Brigadoon and Fall River, you know, I just went to work on it, and it was fantastic to have a project like that.
Yeah.
Then I went and traveled around. You saw it like
I saw
times.
It a number of times. Yeah.
Yeah, I did it here and there. I did it
was wonderful.
Like 50 times.
It was wonderful.
It was good. Wasn't
it was
good.
It was wonderful.
And it combined
everything
I knew how to do.
That's right.
And how many times do you stumble on that in your life?
No, that's exactly right. It was everything you are.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's why her work was so great. Because she took her life experience, having the husband in the war,
right.
and making a ballet about the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
and about the women being
at home. Oh, God, right.
She took her life
oh, God, that's
and put
right.
that into her work. And it was a match.
Yes, it was a match.
So that was like the first big find.
And that was a long stretch. That's a number of years
yeah.
I've dedicated to the finding, the creating, the doing of yeah. Agnes. What are we talking about?
Altogether, about probably about 6 years.
Yeah.
And I got other jobs. I mean, I went to Gateway and played Fanny Bryce's mother, and I went here and did jobs, and I didn't do a lot of, you know, plays, and I joined the Theater Artists Workshop here.
And that's the other thing.
Which was great. There was a workshop in
right.
Westport.
Right. Right, talk
actors,
about it.
Writers, and directors called the Theater Artist Workshop. And I didn't even know that was here when I moved here.
Wow.
And nobody was really in charge. It was like members on a board.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to join, you had to audition or you had to meet them. But nobody, like, there was no office.
Right.
So you had to wait until they had like 6 people to meet.
Right.
So it took me like 6 months or a year before they called me
wow.
or whatever. And I used to walk by and go, how come I'm not a member yet? What's the matter with you? I've been on Broadway twice.
Right.
So eventually, you know, I auditioned and
you got
they
in.
Took me.
Right. And that became a lot of a big part of your life.
Yes.
Yeah. And answered a lot of the questions about what am I doing with my creativity.
Yes, and it did that for everybody in the group.
Yeah.
And if you were having a hard, you could come up against it in a way. Like you could, if you got mad at it.
Got mad at it.
It, whatever it, I'm not going there. It's Monday night. We'd meet every Monday night. I'm not going there Monday nights because I'm not in the business anymore. And then right. you got to go through your,
right.
And then there were, Lee Richardson was in the group. Mm-hmm. Morton DaCosta was, had just died, I think. He was a, and people actually got work from what they were doing.
Yeah, I'm sure.
One summer, my kids went off to camp, and I had a month. And I said, I'm going to put this first 20 minutes of Agnes DeMille up on the stage before he gets home.
Right.
Because I'm going to really concentrate, and I did it. And people went, wow, this is good.
Yeah.
So I went to work and did it at the Smithsonian and did it.
Yes, oh my God, I remember.
Up in, you know, a lot of colleges did it at Fairfield U on the big stage. You know, there were like, you know, 300 people in my audience. It was cool.
It was wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you were there a lot.
I was there a lot. I did. I showed up a lot. I loved it. Also,
and it kept me feeling like a creative.
Yes.
I mean, and then by the end of it, it started to, aside from the DeMille estate, which changed hands, essentially, and the fellow who took it over, he and I just did not gel. We yeah. ungelled, and it turned out to not have a particularly happy ending, because I thought that they would help me.
Yes. They were stupid.
I think so.
Because nothing has happened now.
Yeah, I think so.
They could have had it, and now they have nothing.
Because I think it was good enough to do it in New York.
Absolutely was.
And it would have been great. But in a way that the last couple of times that I did it, I drove up to Potsdam, New York. I went to SUNY Potsdam. Mm-hmm. Somebody knew about it, and because I had done it in Washington, and I had done it a lot of places, and somebody called me and said, can you come do it for our dance department, and we'll do a little workshop. And anytime I've ever worked, I always end up doing a chorus line workshop, almost always, because as soon as anybody finds out, or
right.
we talk about it, there's always dancers, and they always want to learn the opening. Da 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 da, and they always want to learn one.
Yeah.
Right. So I always do that. I just think that's fun. I think a lot of us do. Mm-hmm. A lot of us chorus liners, we do that. But I was driving up to Potsdam, which is an 8-hour drive, and then drove back from Potsdam. I spent three days in Potsdam, and then came back. And I think altogether I made, you know, $1,000 maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And it started to get lonely.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Philadelphia for 3 days. You know, it started to get lonely.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons why I like to keep creating things is because I figure if I keep working, eventually people will start hiring me again to be in a play. Where you say a line, I say a line. We work together on stage.
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite so, it's lonely up there alone.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
So it was great, but it was a great way to keep
all those things going.
Yeah.
And I want to say, the other thing that you
thank you.
Did.
It's so great to be able to talk about this.
Well, it is.
I feel very good about all the work I've done.
Well, you should. You should. And now, and we haven't even mentioned all of the choreography and directing that you have done here in various venues, all the schools, all the plays that you...
Well, that's a lot of it's just for fun. Well,
so what?
It's a little money and a little fun. Yeah.
Well, but it's the same thing. It's that you never have stopped.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's...
Well, I don't know what I do with myself.
Well, you don't have to explain it. It's just the truth. You're always... There is always a school that you're doing the choreography for their end play or the local organization that's putting on a review that needs...
Let us not forget Small House of Uncle Thomas at Camp Red Wing. And the Slaughter on 10th Avenue Ballet, also at Camp Red Wing. 12-year-old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Da-da-da-da. I love that. That was so cool.
But the truth is that there's, in my experience of you, there has almost never been a moment that you have not been involved in some project. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that you're continually using one or another or all of those skills. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's that common.
That's
I
great.
Really don't, you know. I mean, I think a lot of people worked and then don't work, but they don't they don't continue to create opportunities.
Hmm.
You know, lots of people have asked you to do this, And in my experience, you just always say yes.
Yeah, except for teaching. I discovered that I do not like teaching. I'm a much better teacher if I'm directing or choreographing.
Right, fine.
So I don't like being in front of a classroom, and every time I say yes, I'm sorry. Not that I'm sorry to do it, but I just don't.
You think to yourself, oh, yeah, right, I didn't want to do
this. I never feel prepared.
Oh, that's so funny.
Classroom of people just standing there looking at me, waiting for me to tell them what to do. I hate that.
And when you choreograph, that's what they're doing. They're standing there waiting for you to tell them how to move.
It's different.
I guess.
What it is.
Okay, so now we come.
Right.
As if.
I love this.
Yeah, as if all of this were not enough, we have Play With Your Food.
Play With Your Food.
Right.
So I'm sitting in a cultural arts parents committee meeting, because that's what you do when you're a parent in any town. And cultural arts committee is where you bring in culture.
Uh-huh.
You bring in a dance company. We brought in Paul Taylor, and the committee, meaning usually me, or somebody who else has been around a stage, you sweep the floor, you make sure there's water.
Right. You know what is necessary.
Stuff. You know what you do. So, and so I'm sitting there with this other woman, Nancy, and we're like, is this meeting ever going to be over? Anyway, so we're trying to talk about, she says to me, we have to do something. I can't stand it anymore. And I say, well, I have to do something too. What should we do? And I don't know quite exactly how it happened, but we heard about this other thing in the city that was similar to this. Anyway, we came up with Play With Your Food.
Right.
Which was a lunchtime play reading series where people would come and have lunch and then watch plays, one-act plays. And we decided we'd do it. So we found some plays.
Yes.
I found some plays. And Nancy invited like six friends that we got a postcard made. And Nancy, we all invited like some friends. And we asked people to invite their friends to buy tickets.
Right.
And we did the first one in January at a little place in Westport. And people loved it. They loved the social thing.
Yeah.
Nobody sees anybody in the winter here.
Yeah.
So they loved it, and then people started to call and get tickets for the February one, right from their seats. So.
And again, I was at a lot of that.
You were.
I was.
You were, and we found some good comedies, you know, stuff that's
not
published.
Not we found.
I found, that's true.
That's right.
I did, I found.
Carol read all the plays, chose all the plays, cast all the plays.
directed
all the plays. Right. And MCs it.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah, that's true, I do.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Oh, God.
And when did you start this? How long ago?
This is going to be our seventh year.
Oh, my God.
Starting now, so.
And it has grown like Topsy.
Yeah, we started in 03. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we did four shows, January, February, March, and April. Then the next year, we doubled them.
And meaning you did?
We did two in February. We did the same show twice.
Right.
And we still sold out. And then the third year, we maybe added Stamford or Greenwich. We added another town. And then, now Nancy is a person who cannot stand to have an empty seat. So she's a maniac when it comes to selling tickets. So I don't really know how she does it. You know, she does it with email. She does it with sending. She does it with, we write to people. We call, you know. But we sell every ticket. We are a sellout. Then we added another town. So last year, we did Greenwich, Stamford, and Westport. And then we tripled our Westport. We do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in Westport. And then the next Tuesday, Wednesday in Greenwich. And then the next Thursday in Fairfield, we did last year. And we thought we were going to sell 120 tickets in Fairfield. We sold 175. We almost filled the place.
Oh, my God.
Then we had to figure out the lunch. So we have a warehouse. Oh, it's unbelievable.
What do you mean, though? You have a warehouse?
They have a warehouse attached to the theater.
Right.
And we did the lunch in the warehouse.
Oh, my God.
And we set up chairs, and we set up the buffet, and then we have to get the people from the thing into the thing.
And get them back out again.
But boy, there's something about, and I, when there's a playwright that I particularly, first of all, I love the plays, and I love the playwrights.
Right.
And also in the Theater Arts Workshop, we have some fantastic playwrights, some of whom are not published.
Right.
So nobody has access to these plays.
Well, not nobody.
Well, right. And then we have published authors who are in, like a guy named Fred Stroppel, who's fantastic. I mean, Samuel French loves him, but we love him more.
Yeah, right.
And then I'm sometimes invited to be a judge at like a Greenwich play reading contest or something, and then I'll find a play or two there. And then I wrote to Frank Gilroy, who was a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright from The Subject Was Roses, and we put on one of his short plays, and I found his address on the internet.
Wow.
And I wrote him a note, just, you know, because we pay royalties.
Right.
But they do that to his agent or whoever. And I wrote him a note, he wrote me back.
Oh, God.
He said, it's always so nice to know that one's words are being heard. I mean, this is really cool.
It is amazing. It is amazing. And again, it's all the things that you are. I mean, with the possible exception that you're not dancing at these things.
Thank God.
You know? It takes all of your skills, which are, it seems to me, very, very varied. Very, very varied. Very, very varied.
Very, very varied.
They are, no kidding. And so this thing has truly grown.
Yes.
And now you're putting together a book proposal for...
Yes. We want to take the plays that have not been published and make sure that they get published, because they're very good.
Yeah.
They're very, very good. People really love them. People come up to me at the beach in the summer and say, first of all, we love you. We love what you did with Play With You. No, they love me. They love the event. They look forward to it. They come up to me all the time. And we can't wait for next year. We can't wait to see what you're doing. And also it's another thing, because in the workshop and in this neighborhood, we have a lot of professional,
I was just
very
gonna say,
good actors.
And you get to get them work.
Yeah, well, they're also willing to put in the work. You know, you hire an actor and everybody gets paid, you know, a couple $100 for the week's work, but or whatever it is, because we now have a good arrangement with Equity and stuff. But actors pick up a script and people work very hard on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come in and it looks like falling off a log. But it ain't.
No.
Yeah.
The point I'm making is that they all want to work.
Oh, everybody wants
and
to
you
work.
And
right.
You are in a position to not only do this wonderful thing, but to get people work.
It really does create
yeah,
work.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Which is, and everybody knows that work leads to more work.
That's right.
Right.
And anyway, everybody wants to be working.
Everybody wants to be working. So
right.
People say, yeah,
so it's
sure.
a mitzvah.
Well, well, we also, you know, we paid over $10,000 to actors this year.
Wow.
And I think that's really cool.
It's amazing.
That just blows my mind. When I look at our, because I do the books. I keep the books.
Because on the side, Carol is a bookkeeper.
I love that.
Yes.
My QuickBooks.
And that's her phone.
And that's my phone.
Would you like to answer it?
I think I would.
Okay, good. We're stopping again. Okay, so.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
Go, no. What were you going to say?
Well, what I think is great,
yeah.
This is what I think is really great, is that when you've been doing something a really long time, I almost shouldn't say this because I'm going to knock on wood when I say it, but when you get an instinct for what people want to see or what I would want to see. I mean, I keep talking about Albert Haig, but he was a great teacher,
mm-hmm.
and he taught me a lot. He was a composer. He wrote, you know,
Plain and
Young
Fancy.
And Foolish.
Isn't that Plain and Fancy?
Plain and Fancy, mm-hmm. and Redhead, and he spent a lot of time thinking about all of this,
mm-hmm.
and I'd say, Albert, you know, how do you know what to write? And he'd say, I imagine sitting in the theater, what would I like to hear?
Wow.
And I think about the kind of plays that I love.
Yes.
A lot of plays like The Man Who Came to Dinner.
Yeah.
I love Neil Simon. I love plays that are about something.
Yes.
But they're kind of lighthearted, not always. I mean, I've done some really good. I have a wonderful play called The Garden of St. Luke's about two moms who had both lost sons to AIDS.
Mm.
And it's a brilliant play. It's just a wonderfully written, great, heartfelt piece. It's not published. Drives me crazy. Anyway, I don't like to be assaulted when I go into the theater. I want someone I can trust. You know, we really try to, I don't know why I started talking about this, but there's something about sort of knowing what's going to, and I think that I'm very lucky that the people who come to our plays like the plays that I like. That's what it is, because we only put on plays that we love.
Right.
And whenever we put on plays that we sort of love, we don't feel so good about it. I feel like I got away with it, because I got a good actor to pull it out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple of plays that we've done that haven't been quite so good, and I go, is it good enough? Is it good enough? It's fine. but it's not as good as...
But you know what this is? This is just like...
It's so interesting.
You work hard because you work hard.
Yeah.
You know, you work hard because that's the right thing to do. It's not... You're not cavalier. You're not frivolous.
No, why bother?
Well,
yeah.
Lots of people are.
Well,
but you are not.
This is just us. You know, we make it up. So
yes,
we can do whatever we want. And
but you could do it... You know, when you say it's just us, we make it up, it sounds like you're diminishing it.
Yeah. Okay.
You make it up, but you make it up to an incredibly high level. The standard is very high.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's why it works.
It's true.
That's why it works. And the other thing that comes across so clearly to me is your absolute, I mean, we've talked about this, it's not a surprise, your absolute passion for good work.
Yeah.
You know, for real writing, for real stories, for real characters.
For good acting.
For good acting.
Oh, I love
good acting. Right, yes. You love all the good stuff.
Yeah.
And you're uncompromised. And I know, because I've heard you say, oh my God, I read 20 plays, I have to read 20 more plays, oh my God, I got to spend 18 hours in the library, oh my God, I'm going to get up. You know, and I've heard this over and over and over from you, and I know that you don't stop. You know, if you're saying occasionally you throw in something you're not absolutely sure of, okay, fine. Most of the time, you have just you've reamed yourself, you know, to find the stuff, and that's why it works.
I guess
I know it's true.
I guess, and I have a partner who's a lot the same way
about other things, right.
So we encourage each other, even though we drive
each other crazy. Well, you compliment
each
other, is what you do. Her skills are the ones that you need to get the people in and all that stuff.
Right.
And your skills are what you give the people when they're there that brings them back.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. Do you want to say anything about, I mean, right now, Play With Your Food is only in Connecticut, in various towns in Connecticut, right?
Well, I think we're working on we have a website, of course, www.playwithyourfood.com.
One more time, and more slowly.
www.playwithyourfood.com.
Yes, and...
I mean, not that there's pictures on the website.
Right.
There's, you can buy tickets.
Right.
All that jazz.
And when the book gets published, it'll be on the website. And
But I think what we could do next is, you know, you have a theater.
Yes.
And... Would you be interested in doing Play With Your Food at your theater? Why not?
Why not is right.
So we could teach you how to do it. What I really want to talk about is the deer play.
The deer play?
The deer play.
What is the deer?
I want to tell you about the deer play.
Okay.
Do you know who Mary Louise Wilson is? She won the Tony last year for Grey Garden. Well, she has written some great plays. She wrote this play called The Deer Play. I knew that The Deer Play was the way we should end our season this year. It was like a couple years ago... There was a play called The Cruise on Glacier Bay by Fred Stroppel. And it was about two people who are old, and they had forgotten that they had gotten divorced. They were at a party, and they were bickering and arguing, and then the niece comes along and says, "Hi, Aunt Connie, Uncle Artie." And Aunt Connie says, "I can't be married to him anymore," and the niece starts laughing. They had forgotten that
they
had
gotten divorced. That's wonderful.
They went right back into the...
It's wonderful.
And in the play that was Jim Noble, who you would know from the Benson, he played the governor, and Brett Somers.
Oh, my God.
Who has just died this year.
Oh, I didn't know.
She's probably the funniest person you ever met. Mm-hmm. She was hysterically funny. And I knew that was the way to end our season, our first season, with the two of them walking off together into the sunset with the... It was brilliant. Anyway, so this year I had The Deer Play. And it's by Mary Louise Wilson, and it's this woman who's an actress who buys a place in the country, and she loves her garden. She loves her garden. And anybody who lives in Connecticut or any of these, you know, suburban towns with a garden knows.
I just want to say that this morning Carol came running into my room and said, look, and there was
this beautiful deer, yes,
eating the grass.
But usually they eat the flowers.
Yes, well, there weren't any.
So this woman comes to her beautiful garden that she, and she sees that every single flower is gone. And she completely loses it bit by bit. She just loses it. It's a beautiful little one-eyed. And by the end of the play, she's sitting alone in her garden in the evening. I mean, there's assorted scenes that go on. But at the end of the play, she's sitting alone in the garden, and it's evening. And we notice that there is an actor walking down the aisle. And the way this guy, Don Striano, did it, Eileen Lawless was the woman. She was unbelievably good. Don Striano is one of my favorite actors, had chomping on a carrot. We put antlers on his head. And he's got, like, carrots coming out of his, you know, like, greenery.
Yeah, right.
And he's chomping on the carrot, and he's walking down the aisle, and he's nuzzling people in the audience. And little by little, they notice that he's walking down the aisle.
Right.
And he walks up to the stage, and he goes, "Hi." She goes, "What are you doing here?" "Well, you're talking?" "Hi." So the play ends, the last scene of the play is with her and the deer.
Deer, right.
And then they go walking off to go to the woods. It's
a brilliant way to end the season,
and I knew this. I had talked Nancy, and it took me a year and a half to get her to... But it was great. People talk about that. They come up to me in the supermarket. "Oh, that deer play."
That's great. It's great.
Yeah. And then we went to Ensemble Studio. We go into New York and see one act.
Mm-hmm.
And we see most of them, a lot of them put us to sleep, but this Israel Horowitz play called Beirut Rocks, a new play that he had just written, about four college kids in Lebanon. They're all in a hotel, and they're all being gagged because the bombs are starting to fall.
Oh.
And it was brilliant. And it's based on a true story, so we brought up the four kids from the city. And we were rehearsing in the city, and I'm rehearsing in a room with people I've never met.
Yeah, right.
I go there at 1 o'clock, they show up, "Hi, how are you?" Praying that, first of all, they're going to show up. You know, actors are pretty good. But I don't know them. I don't know if I'm going to be able to. And one of them was in contact with Israel Horowitz. We had the wrong copy of the script. We had an outdated copy.
Oh, my God.
So we emailed him. He emailed us a copy. We made copies. And he shows up at rehearsal a half hour.
Oh, my God.
So I'm in a room with four actors I don't know and Israel Horowitz, great playwright.
Wow.
And then we did the play here in each of our venues, and it was sensational because it was really a great play. So, you know, it's all very exciting.
Yeah.
It's a little anxiety-provoking, at the least.
But it's...
Hi, I got a commercial. I mean, I can't really cast these things until the week before because people work.
Oh, God,
I can't always
right.
cast them. You know, it's it makes
but
it
you always do.
Not so far. So it's pretty, but when I talk about it and I realize how exciting it is, it's pretty exciting.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful, and it's in my view, only the most current thing.
Well, that's very nice.
No, I mean, I've known you a very long time.
Yeah, it's true.
And I have a lot of perspective on this.
you do.
And I think, I said at the beginning that play with your food was going to be the thing. That you know, you were going to ride play with your food because it's a brilliant concept. And I've been to so many of them, I know how wonderful it is. So, okay, let's wind down. Is there anything?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd like to do a play in New York.
Fine.
2 days after Play With Your Food closed this season, I went to the Public Theater in Maine. Mm. And did Over the River and Through the Woods.
Right.
And it was so much fun just to be in a play. Not have to sell the tickets and not have to cast it and not have to worry about the lights and not have to worry about if the air conditioner was going to work or not. It was wonderful.
So I just want to say that. I want to say to my audience that pay attention because the chances are very good that you will, in fact, be able to see Carol Schweide in a play in New York.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, I don't think that is in any way far-fetched.
I hope not.
No.
You know, you never know whether it's just a pipe dream or whether you can actually do it. You know, you have these ideas in your head and you think, am I crazy or am I a creator?
You know, I have tears in my eyes. I think that's true for all of us. For everybody who fell in love with an art form.
Yeah.
You know, that I've said in a lot of these interviews that I think that we live in a time and in a culture that makes it very difficult. And so you can never know whether you are what they want, you know, at this particular time, that the fact that you love it is enough, however hard you have worked. But I want to say that I think what you said earlier on in the interview that had to do with if you work hard, you have a better shot at working.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know very many people who work as hard as you do.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Well, you're welcome.
You do.
Which must be why we're friends for so long.
Maybe.
But I do think that that's what you said is really pivotal to everybody who's fallen in love. You know, if you fell in love with writing or dancing or drawing or painting or acting or whatever it is, you can't know, you know, whether you're going to be able to work at it in the world.
Right.
And it is a struggle. You know, it is hard.
There's something also about not, I mean, we all want to make enough money and all that, but there's something about not wanting, I notice, I mean, I think about this a lot, not wanting something back for it.
Just
there's something
wanting
about
to do
the
it.
Wanting to do it.
Yes.
And but you also do want something back. I mean, I really look forward to being written about in American Theater Magazine. I think that this is a cool thing that people should want. I love that we were in the New York Times last year.
Yes, and she didn't say that Play With Your Food was written up in the New York Times last
year.
Times.
Right. I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. And there was a picture and it was a full page. I mean, it was the Connecticut section. But who's counting? We all want stuff back. You know, you want...
See, I think it's a mixed thing. I think that the more you love the thing and want to do it for its own sake, the better chance you have of getting something back for it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You know.
I think that's right.
And I know this about you because I've seen most of what you've done.
Yeah, really.
You know? And you do it all wonderfully. You do it all wonderfully, and you work your ass off. So, thank you very much for this.
Well, thank you very much. This is exciting to
yeah,
sort of
lovely.
Go through a little trip through your life and go, ooh.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
No,
that's
good.
Not bad at all. Thanks, Lynn.
Thanks, Carol.
And there you have Carol Schweid, who is, in my view, the poster child for why I do this interview series called Anatomy of an Artist, to demonstrate what it really means to be who you really are. When you listen to Carol talk about all of these things for which she has a passionate attachment, she loves dancing. She loves actors. She loves playwrights. She loves plays. All of this is absolutely true. It's pouring out of her. Carol is a person who is, certainly in this area of her life, exactly who she is. There's no cover story here. There's no hiding and pretending. This is truly what you see is what you get. It's what this show is all about. My belief that we can all be more and more and more that. So thank you, Carol, for demonstrating in this interview what I have always known is true for you and what I'm hoping is true more and more and more for all of us. By the way, this was a year ago, and Play With Your Food just keeps expanding. They're doing it now for organizations. They target particular plays, or Carol targets particular plays for particular organizations. They're doing it in more states. They're beginning to franchise. So if you are interested at all in this, go up on their website, Play With Your Food. I think it's .org. But if you have trouble with that, go up on my website, thelynshow.com, thelynshow.com. And just say, I want to talk to Carol, or I'm interested in Play With Your Food, or any of that stuff. And of course, you know you can email me, and yeah, right. Okay, I'm running right out of time, which quite often happens when I'm talking to somebody, when I'm playing an interview that is so compelling, and I don't want to take any of it out. But I can't end the show without thanking Josh Hackney, as I always do, for his invaluable help getting this show on the air. In every way that it is possible to help, Josh helps. And again, if you need help with recording, with IT, with computers, with electronics, with pieces for your, for any of your equipment, Josh is the man. And again, go up on my website and say, I want Josh, and I'll get him for you. So, as always, I hope that you heard something you can use today. Something that interested you, something that you didn't know, something that you knew but you forgot, something compelling, something that made you laugh or think or something. Because I want you to come back. Because I'll be back here next week, same time, same station, and boy, I hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten